Blog Talk Radio.
American Psychosis Radio, where you're listening to me and leaving everyone else alone. And as a disabled veteran, you'd think that I would have no problem with landing a job, wife, girlfriend, significant other, a nice place to live. And not all bad returns for good deeds either, but I'm sure that everyone has experienced it, and that is discrimination of some kind. Discriminating among the mentally ill or physically challenged people happens every day and is hard to prove. So what's this show all about? It'll be about discrimination against the mentally ill. Since it is more acceptable to have a physical ailment in society, we'll leave the people in that category alone and worry only about discrimination with the mentally ill. The show runs for 30 minutes, and there will be no phone calls this show. So there will be room for that in many more shows to come. So let's get started here with a little bit of On This Day in History. Let's take a look at what happened on September 1836. Sam Houston elected as president of Texas. That's the lead story for the American Revolution. 1774, for the first session of Continental Congress convenes. And in automotive news, 1957, the New York Times gives On the Road a rave review. For Civil War buffs, in 1863, U.S. Foreign Minister threatens the British over ships. And during the Cold War of 1958, Patternak's Dr. Zhivago appears in the United States. In crime, 1972, Arab terrorists take Israeli hostages at the Olympics. I believe those were the Summer Olympics there in Munich. And this disaster happens in 1666 on this date. Londoners desperately attempt to halt a fire. And for general interest in 1774, First Continental Congress convenes. 1877, Crazy Horse killed. As well as in 1905, Russo-Japanese Peace Treaty signed. 1914, Battle of the Marne, or Battle of the Marne, Marne begins. And in 75, Ford assassination attempt thwarted. And in 2005, Katie Couric makes network anchor debut. Thought she was before that time, but apparently not. In literary, 1957, On the Road is published. We're just talking about that. Rave reviews. And in music, 1964, Crazy Horse. Oh, no, I didn't mean to say that. I was reading the wrong line there. Hang on a minute. 1964 in music, House of the Rising Sun by the Animals tops the U.S. pop charts. And in the Old West, 1847, outlaw Jesse James is born in Missouri. Presidential, 1975, Gerald Ford survives first assassination attempt. and we'll give it about the wars, 1969 tally change for Mylan massacre, and in 1970 U.S. forces launched last major American operation of the war. 1914, Jeffrey gives order to attack the Marne. And in 1943, World War II news, U.S. forces seize more than any part of New Guinea. But that was what happened on this date. Doesn't sound too interesting to me, but some of the parts of it looks pretty awe-inspiring. Now, as we're going to go on with tonight's show, we're going to talk about stigma and American Psychosis Radio Inside Look at mentally ill patients. For having schizophrenia, I do know this. I have felt the blunt end of discrimination. A type of problem that the United States, or I should say a problem of worldwide nature, in a separate and unequal system. I was reading an article in USA Today, and our article just did it. Now, I'm not saying anything recent of that part, but we're going to go through this and highlight the article as I read through it. And we're going to talk about a separate and unequal system. People with mental illness face legal discrimination. And this was in that chapter one of that article called The Cost of Not Caring. But let's go with talking about this. Stigma against the mentally ill is so powerful that it's became codified for 50 years into federal law, and few outside the mental health system even realize it. This systematic discrimination embedded in Medicaid and Medicare laws has accelerated the emptying of state psychiatric hospitals, leaving many of the sickest and most vulnerable patients with nowhere to turn. Now, advocates and experts who spoke with officials of USA Today describe a system in shambles, starving of funding while neglecting millions of people across the country each year. The failure to provide such treatment and supportive services to people with mental illness, both in the community and in the hospitals, has overburdened emergency rooms, private, state, and local jails, and left untreated patients to fend for themselves on city streets. As Patrick Kennedy, former congressman from Rhode Island, is thought to provide better care for the mentally ill, not just in Rhode Island, but across the U.S. as well. USA routinely fails to provide the most basic services for people with mental illnesses, something the country would never tolerate for patients with cancer or other physical disorders, Kennedy says. While he is saying mental health is a separate but unequal system, Kennedy says. We have a wasteland of people who have died and been disabled because of inadequate care. Although most people with mental illnesses are not violent, the U.S.'s dysfunctional, long-neglected mental health system is under a microscope because of mass shootings in which the perpetrators had serious psychiatric problems. In a series of stories in the coming months, USA Today will explore the human and financial costs that the country pays for not caring more than nearly 10 million Americans with serious mental illnesses. Stigma, a common thread in this series, forces many to live in the same rather than seek support. They'd rather live in shame, not because they have a choice, but because they feel as if they have no choice, even as their lives unravel. Yet patients who want to help often can't find it, says Kennedy, who has acknowledged his own struggles with bipolar disorder and drug addiction. Stigma even shaped the crafting of the Medicaid law a half a century ago because Congress didn't want to waste federal money on mental illnesses, said Ron Mastrosch-Manderscheid, executive director of the National Association of County Behavioral Health and Disability Development Directors. People are operating under the belief that mental health was a black hole for money, Manderscheid says. An obscure provision of the mentally ill shadows under the Medicaid law specifics that funds may be used for hospitals treating physical conditions but generally do not treat for mental health, says Tim Murphy, a child psychologist who's introduced legislation to ease these restrictions. The Medicare law discriminates against those with mental illnesses as well by limiting the number of days that patients can receive inpatient psychiatric care. Medicare imposes no such limits for physical health, says Mark Covell, president and CEO of the National Association of Psychiatric Health Systems. But by denying hospital care to the mentally ill, Murphy says Congress sets two standards for health, effectively telling the country that the mentally ill are less deserving of a decent life than others. I feel like as if they got that right. By forcing the mentally ill to live with sicknesses, confusion, and disability, federal law reinforces the assumption that the mentally ill are incapable of leading functional, safe, successful lives. But the federal government has set so many barriers to getting care, which they have done with no other type of illness, and it's wrong, Murphy says. And I hate to say, but Murphy's right. There is no other area of medicine where the government is the source of the stigma. Now, let me tell you this. This just does not stem from getting medical care or mental health care in the right area in which the patient needs it. This stigma stems from many other areas of life as well, such as landing a nice place to live or something as simple and down to earth as dating a significant other. But without federal support, states haven't been able to afford to keep their psychiatric hospitals open. Illinois is one of them. States closed 10% of their hospital beds from 2009 to 2012, says Robert Glover, executive director of the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors. But private hospitals have reduced their psychiatric beds as well, because Medicare and Medicaid typically pay less to inpatient mental health care than for medical care, says Ron Homberg, National Director of Policy and Legal Affairs at NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's just pure discrimination, Goebel says. It's penalizing the poor and disabled. Mental health advocates have more success reforming the private insurance system. And you know, this part here is what makes me sicker than sick. Okay? This is what makes me totally, absolutely, obliteratively sick. That I didn't think that this problem was this common. That as I read through this article and learned a lot more about the problem, I knew well on that this problem is basically a serious one. But while in Congress, Kennedy led the fight to require private insurers to provide equal coverage for physical and mental health, resulting in a 2008 parity law that applies to policies issued after July 1st. Kennedy has joined in lawsuits against insurance companies to force them to comply. Although Medicare has corrected some of its unequal payments in recent years, it isn't affected by the parity law. Kennedy says, the federal government hasn't yet issued rules governing how the parity law affects Medicaid, the largest provider of mental health services in the country. But Pastor Rick Warren, a best-selling author, struggled to find long-term care for his son, Matthew, who suffers from depression for so many years. At one point, we were counseled that Matthew needed extended long-term help in a long-term care facility, Warren told USA Today. Then we began to look for one, which couldn't find one. Warren, founder of Saddleback Community Church in Orange County, California, began speaking out about mental illnesses after Matthew killed himself last year at age 27. Warren compares the stigma of mental health illnesses to that of AIDS and HIV. In both cases, people are blamed for bringing suffering upon themselves, he says. But if you stop and take a look at this, majority of Americans with mental illnesses have frequent contact with law enforcement. A movement that shuttered state hospitals left holes and jails are often the only plug. 40% of people with severe mental illnesses, such as schizophrenia, received no treatment in the past year. See additional coverage of the network that we're talking about. Warren says also that if he has diabetes, there is no stigma to that. Says Warren, who's making mental health one of his key ministries. But if my brain doesn't work, why am I supposed to be ashamed of that? It's just another organ. People would readily admit to taking medicine for high blood pressure, but if I'm taking medicine for some kind of mental problem I'm having, I'm supposed to hide that. Very good points that this guy has. But the cost of not caring, Chapter 2, will continue in a moment from USA Today and American Psychosis Radio with me, your host, Jory Rowe. Now we're back, and we're going to talk about a lady named Tracy Love, who suffered from mental illness for 20 years before getting help. The delay led to frequent panic attacks, drinking and or drug use, abusive relationships, 3 suicide attempts, and a felony conviction. But after Love's first suicide attempt 30 years ago, her parents told her to stop feeling sorry for herself and snap out of it, she says. It was only later I started to get better that I came to find out there's a mental illness in my family, says Love, 52, who lives in Rochester, or near Rochester, New York, but nobody ever talked about it. Doctors failed to diagnose Love's mental illness even after that suicide attempt sent her to the hospital. She finally found herself help in the unlikeliest of places, jail, where Love was incarcerated after stabbing an abusive boyfriend. A jail psychiatrist who interviewed her after the arrest was the first person to diagnose her with major depression and post-traumatic stress disorder, says Love, who credits that doctor for changing her life. The incident cost Love dearly. She lost her job and custody of her 10-year-old son for 3 years. Although Love has turned her life around and works on a contract basis in mental health, she says her felony record has kept her from finding a permanent job. If someone hadn't listened to me the way that psychiatrist listened to me in jail, Love says, I think maybe my illness would not have gotten that far. And I do agree with that, because the more you stir the manure, the more it smells. But on average, people with mental illness wait nearly a decade to get treatment after symptoms first appear. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, nearly 40% of all adults with serious mental illnesses receive no treatment in the previous year, according to the 2012 National Survey on Drug Use and Health produced by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Among adults with any mental illnesses, 60% were untreated. Although some people with mental illnesses don't realize they're sick, others simply can't find help. It is common for mentally ill patients who go to the hospital in search of treatment for a psychiatric crisis or languish for weeks in an emergency room, says Robert Curtinini, a professor at the University of Vermont College of Medicine and chair of psychiatry, and Fletcher Allen Healthcare in Burlington. In November, the son of Virginia State Senator Craig Deeds, a former gubernatorial candidate, was released from an emergency room because staff there couldn't find a psychiatric bed. Hours later, he stabbed his father, then fatally shot himself. The senator survived and has become an advocate for changing mental health laws. If this were cancer, we'd be talking about giving patients to the very, very best treatments, Cretanini says. In mental health, a peculiarly in the funding formula is deciding how we treat patients. Funding is so poor and services are so hard to find that many patients get help only after they become psychotic, Manderscheid says. That's akin to treating diabetes only after someone needs a leg amputated, Kennedy says. Karis Myrick, who has schizoaffective disorder and obsessive compulsive disorder, says she has experienced the problem firsthand. Myrick is a former CEO and nonprofit group of the nonprofit group that tries to bridge these gaps by providing overnight crisis care to patients who need urgent help. These programs are few and far between. You go to the hospital and say, I'm on the verge of a breakdown. The hospital will say, you're not sick enough, says Myrick, former president of the National Alliance on Mental Illnesses. I said, what do you mean I'm not sick enough? I'm not trying to get sick. And we're going to read down chapter 3 here as soon as we take a silent break to find out where we stand on time here on American Psychosis Radio with me, your host, Jory Rowe. Okay, now that we're down here a little bit on the wire on time, we're just going to sit here and talk about this whole subject about discrimination against the mentally disabled when it comes to finding medical care, finding adequate housing, and maybe adequate employment to supplement Social Security check income. Now, let me tell you about my story. Now, you probably heard me talk about it on the radio quite a bit. And that is how I felt like I got discriminated against an ambulance company when I was completely out of medicine, just totally besides myself. And to tell you the truth, when you get besides yourself, you neglect doing things like taking routine things like taking baths, you know, grooming, taking out a set of clean clothes. And like with me, I looked like I'd been through the ringer for probably about 3 days on this day that I was just so beside myself because I didn't have my psychiatric medicine. And because I didn't have my psychiatric medicine, it was because the prescriptions had ran out and I was in between doctors and trying to get adequate medical help for the problems that I was facing. Well, I call an ambulance, and they just treat me like I was wasting their time. I would tell you the name of the ambulance company called Advanced Medical Transport. And they send me a bill for like $500, and they're telling me this wasn't a medical emergency, and your insurance company unfortunately won't pay us, so you're going to have to pay us, Mr. Rowe. And I'm just sitting here like, you know what? I don't have a penny in my pocket to pay this, and as far as I'm concerned, you guys were rude. And as far as furthermore, I say they could go to hell. Absolutely, because I felt like as they discriminated against me when it came to coming and picking me up, I was wasting their time. Holy crap, people. I didn't know that these paramedics worked so hard they can't have their time wasted. Well, I was just in need of an ambulance as somebody having a heart attack was. And that's the way I look at it. And I look at it this way furthermore, that it was their job to come and pick me up regardless of what I needed them for. I needed them for something, so then you come and get me. And if my insurance company don't pay for it, I think that should be between them and my insurance company, not me. Just they said, well, you could have walked to the hospital or you could have had somebody take you to the hospital if it was this bad. And they're just making me totally feel like garbage about myself in the backs of this ambulance because they felt as if I was wasting their time. I'll tell you what. I wrote them a letter and I said, I promise to God I won't ever waste your time again. And as far as I'm concerned, I'll walk to the hospital while holding my guts in with a spoon and a roll of duct tape, if need be. If I needed to ever go to the hospital for anything again, I won't take an ambulance because I'm not going to wait until I have a heart attack before calling them and they said that I'm not wasting their time. Now, to be quite honest with you, they didn't really tell me that, but that's the impression that they did give me. So, all in all, I was pretty upset with them. and maybe a little bit upset with myself because I kind of felt like a jackass. I'm like, how in the heck could I waste the time? But that's just a drop in a bucket of what we're talking about with this schizophrenia and people with extreme mental health disorders. And none of what we think, none of what we do, people should really look lightly upon. But I'm not saying they should just take us seriously that if we look at them sideways, that they turn around and think we went planners on them. But anyway, we're running out of time for this episode, and just want to go over here with you on some other episodes that are going to be coming up next on the American Psychosis Radio. And the next show we're going to talk about, which is next Saturday, we're going to talk about our pets and why they mean so much to us. And the following Saturday in September will be a show about coming back to reality or from vacation in the mind. Then the last show of the month, we're going to talk about our friend Sigmund Freud with In Depths of the Mind. And then we're going to go into October show announcements and October activities, as well as what we got slated for the board here this September on American Psychosis Radio and JC Entertainment 14. If you would like the email, and just rattle that off, it's jcentertainment14@gmail.com. Leave me emails there anytime you want, or visit me on Facebook, just under my name, straight under my name, Jory Rowe. Look me up on Facebook. Yeah, you'll find me. And leave me a message there on any show ideas or any other thing I could do to make my show be more presentable to you. But likewise, this is Jory Rowe. We're kind of coming down to being out of time for this show, and we'll be back next week as we talk about our pets and why they mean so much to us here on American Psychosis Radio with your host, Jory Rowe. So long for now. JC Entertainment 14 Productions. Cheerio, put your paws down, please.